Well, thanks very much, Roz, for that introduction. Thank you to Margaret for referring to me as an expert in government. Of course, the obvious rejoinder to that is if I really was an expert, I'd be in government. Can I, of course, acknowledge we're meeting on traditional lands of the Ngunnawal people and pay my respects to their elders, past and present. Like Roz, I have a Michael Kirby link. I was Michael Kirby's associate from financial year 1997-1998, and the last day of that associateship was also the last day on which I did any legal work, then segueing into the worlds of policy, economics, and back into policy. I don't think I can do anything like Roz's extraordinary poem, but since we're in the realm of the arts, I thought it was worth noting that we're in a room today that is whose artwork is done by Leonard French. Leonard French also did the ceiling of the National Gallery of Victoria, a stained glass ceiling that's the largest in the world. And one of his lovely metaphors is to say that paintings are like your children. You think you own them, and yet they have a life of their own. It's fitting today because ideas are very much like that. Don't seek to hold your ideas too close. Let them go out to the world and grow up. My five ideas today, my five suggestions to you from turning your ideas into policy, begin with the notion of a bumper sticker. Much as it pains us as experts in policy areas, think about how your ideas can be crystallised down to a simple bumper sticker, to a nugget of idea, to a nugget that someone can take and hold and tell others about. That might be a goal. In my own case, less inequality, more social capital, less traffic congestion. It might be a particular policy that you want to advance. Let's update our workplace relations laws to keep pace with the sharing economy. Let's have more randomised policy trials. Let's close tax loopholes. Let's encourage amicus briefs. Let's allow all kids to have a free dental checkup. Whatever it is, throw away a little of the complexity that marks a great academic article for a willingness to crystallise your idea in a way that others will remember. Second, don't underestimate the power of statistics and stories. If you're talking about incarceration in Australia, you could well remind people that the incarceration rate in Australia is as high as it's been in probably 100 years. Maybe longer. Who knows? We might have an incarceration rate as high as when the colonies were last prison colonies. Or you could tell a story, like the story of Miss Doo, the 22-year-old Indigenous woman in Western Australia, incarcerated to pay off a $1,000 fine, who fell ill when a wound on her foot became septic and ultimately died in jail. A symbol, if ever there was one, as to the problems that are caused by incarcerating people in order to pay off fines. Each of your work will have its own particular statistics, its own particular stories. Stories jag the heart in a way that arguments sometimes don't. And thinking about the stories that best illustrate the policies you care about can be a way of making sure that your ideas aren't just told but are retold. Third, persevere. You've written a great academic article. That's terrific. Now send it to a few people. Write an opinion piece about it. Write another opinion piece about it. Write a third opinion piece about it. This seems strange to many of us. We imagine that we've done a great piece of work that ought to speak for itself. But the fact is, we've never lived in a noisier world than the one we're in now. Never before has it been harder for your ideas to be heard. So don't hesitate not only to write those terrific pieces for the conversation, which are read. I was citing a conversation piece in a television interview just yesterday. But also be willing to go out there and submit opinion pieces to the broadsheets and gasp, even the tabloids. Take meetings. You'd be surprised, actually, how rarely academics ask to see politicians to discuss their ideas. Your local member will almost always be happy to see you to discuss an idea you're working on. If you're pitching your ideas to ministers, then it might be hard to get to the minister, but don't forget that the decisions are often made at the advisor level. Taking a meeting with a ministerial advisor isn't a downgrade. Often it's actually putting you in front of the right person. Persuade that advisor. They'll write it up the form in which the idea is best placed to affect policy. Make submissions to committee inquiries. Some committees are completely deluged by inquiries. The committee inquiry into same-sex marriage or into child custody in Australia received thousands of submissions. The typical parliamentary committee receives perhaps a dozen submissions. If yours is the one that's sharp, that's on point, you will perhaps have an impact of swaying the committee, almost certainly be asked to come before the committee and give evidence. Maybe your ideas won't get up that time, but those ideas have now gotten a hearing, they've gotten into someone's ear. So taking time to write a simple submission, which can be as straightforward as a brief summary of an article appending the academic article itself. A submission can take a week to write, but it can also be done in an hour. So put in those submissions if you have the opportunities. Recognise too that it's worth taking half a cake, that sometimes your ideas won't be taken up in precisely the form you want. But that getting your ideas partially into the policy realm is a good outcome. Those who persevere the most on this are thinking not just about how they'll affect the current generations, but the generations to come. When I worked for Michael Kirby, as he was rapidly heading towards becoming one of the High Court's most dissenting judges. And he would often say that he was writing for the next generation. Be aware that your ideas, by giving them greater currency, have a greater probability of being picked up at some stage down the track. Bruce Chapman is probably the ANU academic, perhaps the Australian academic, who's had most influence on policy worldwide. Bruce worked on the idea of HECS, the notion that if we asked students to contribute to their education, we could change universities from being a place for the top 10th in their class to being a place for the top third or half of the graduating high school cohort. That idea of HECS has been taken up not just in Australia, but in Thailand, in Britain, in Germany, in Israel, in Chile. Bruce now, of course, wants to HECS the world. He believes HECS ought to apply to the money that we give to farmers in bad times, asking that they might repay some of the money when times turn good. He thinks HECS ought to apply to sports stars so that Leighton Hewitt might be asked to return some of the cost of his studying at the AIS. Bruce has been relentless in his advocacy for HECSing the world, and it's one of the reasons that he's increasingly having an impact. Fourth, have multiple ideas. There is a huge amount of serendipity in determining what ideas get picked up and which ones don't. The luck of politics is one of the defining features of the system. So be ready. If someone says, I'm not sure I buy that argument, what else have you got for me? Have another idea in your back pocket. Might be a colleague's, it might be something you're just working on. But be flexible and willing to put more and more ideas into the system. New South Wales Labor Lawyers has a thing, a booklet called Legal Tweaks. Small booklet, one-page ideas, short, nuggety, straightforward. If you don't like one, you simply turn the page. And that's one way of recognising that putting more ideas in the system increases the chance you'll make a difference. As you've heard from Roz, even the great ALRC doesn't have all of its ideas adopted by the policy process. As part of producing more ideas, it's critical not to feel discouraged, to recognise that this is a large and complicated system, and it's not about you. Fifth, enjoy it. Stay optimistic about the policy process, which is fundamentally not run by people who are stupid or corrupt. I don't want to suggest in saying that that there's no one who's stupid and no one who's corrupt who's ever stalked the halls of power in Australia. But I do want to argue that typically if people aren't taking up your ideas, it's not because they don't understand them or not because vested interests are determining every outcome and policy. So put those ideas in the system and be reluctant to gripe about the particular players. Someone's given you a hearing but hasn't immediately implemented your ideas, that doesn't necessarily mean that you completely wasted your time. You should recognise that sometimes someone will take up one of your ideas partially. And if your response to that is to complain about the half idea they didn't adopt, then your chance of making a difference next time will go down. You may want to praise people who go part way towards accepting your ideas because, like puppy dogs and small children, politicians respond to praise as well as to criticism. As Simon's noted, policy making should not be your main goal as an academic. Changing the face of legal scholarship ought to be your chief role. And so do law reform to the extent that you enjoy it, but no more than that. Work out what's your comparative advantage. That is the thing that you do relatively well. And if you enjoy doing op-eds, by all means do them. But if you find them a painful chore that's distracting from getting that all-important journal article, then hold back and think about other ways of getting your ideas out in the world. My role as a professor turned politician, I see very much as being trying to play in the interface between the halls of power and the academy. I was a research economist at the ANU, and some of my teaching colleagues joke that I now spend more time giving lectures on campus than I did when I was an ANU professor. But one of the reasons that I see that as absolutely critical is because I want to make clear that my door is also open to taking those ideas. William Buckley once said that he'd rather be ruled by the first 2,000 names of the Boston phone book than by the entire faculty of Harvard University. And he's probably right that we don't necessarily want a parliament of professors. But to the extent that we have one or two, I want my role to be playing in the interstices of the universities and the parliament. The best exemplar of this is the late, great US Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, who went from the faculty of Harvard to the US Senate, didn't know author a great deal of critical laws in that period, but was constantly a man of ideas, produced a book every couple of years, and helped to shape a more thoughtful US public debate. So given that I've asked you to produce bumper stickers for your ideas, it's only fitting that I finish with my own. Keep having fun telling many pithy stories. Thanks very much.